My name's Andy Junkin, and I see Family Farms. For the last 10 years, I've been mediating the most dire either farm succession or farm debt cases across North America, and it all comes down to how farm families make decisions together.
Originally in Canada, meeting a girl from Michigan, can you share a little bit more about how you got into this avenue of work and what some of your background is?
The day I left for agriculture college, my mother, she showed me the farm financials, and she says to me, if you don't fix these numbers, I'm leaving your father. And so I've been dealing with this for the last 20 years. Essentially, my dad plowed down my crops without any cause. We had serious issues with me coming home to the family farm and making joint decisions together as a family. And essentially, my parents actually got divorced over a manure spreader. It's a kind of a crappy topic to talk about, but what I've done is turned the BS in my life into fertilizer. Starting off by helping my friends across Western Ontario, and the last 10 years, it's all I've been doing.
You're here at the Great Lakes Fruit, Vegetable, and Farm Market Expo here in Michigan to talk about some of that work and some of the lessons learned that you have to pass on to some other farms. What are some of your talking points during today's keynotes?
Well, I think on most family farms, miscommunication and egos affects the farm's bottom line more than the markets and weather altogether. And we've really never thought about it, how everybody butting heads and pulling the farm in different directions is getting everyone nowhere fast. And how much, at least half the decisions that should be made are not getting made on a family farm, either because everybody's fighting for control of the wheel or nobody's touching the wheel at all. And as a result, money is just slipping between the cracks. And the farms I work with, we're easily able to squeeze out 10 to 25% extra profitability. And for a lot of farm families, that's the difference of whether they'll survive this farm crisis that's coming up or not.
Some of that work, specifically with Michigan's dairy industry, how'd you get connected in that, and maybe some things that stand out from this region of the country?
Earlier this year, I spoke at a conference in Michigan, and for me, that was a turning point in my life. I've been working with a farm family that were fantastic and represented everything in every ideal about the family farm, and it also represented everything that was wrong. It was just essentially a family couldn't sit down and make decisions together. And so for the past 3 years, like a lot of dairies across Michigan, they had been bleeding money. And essentially, they had never sat down once to figure out how to squeeze their cost production significantly. They all had their different ideas, and they were pulling the farm in different directions, and they all had their heart in the right place. It's just that they simply needed to get a common goal as to what they were working towards, and then able to sit down and make decisions together without having to be right. The family culture and a lot of farm families' culture across the Midwest and is simply, you know, the priority of being right becomes a precedence over things actually being right. And that creates both dysfunctional decisions and as a result, dysfunctional families and dysfunctional family businesses. And as a result of going to an auction earlier this year in March, I've worked 20-hour days since that point, and we're actually launching the book today. It's called Tough Times. I should say that again. Tough times never last. Tough farm families do. And I really do think it's a game changer. I think it takes a farmer about an hour and a half to read, so you can sit down and do it one reading. But more importantly, at the end of the book, it's got a 90-day program. So if all your family agrees to a process, it's basically got a program that each week you guys can sit down and make decisions together in a more functional way. And each week we add more layers of complexity. And, you know, I'm convinced on most family farms, you're able to squeeze out an extra 10% profitability. And now I can't guarantee you that because you're only as good as the ideas you guys present. But I've seen it work on so many family farms. And so I've been hell-bent to put this book together because I really think that this Christmas, this message needs to get into so many family farms so that they don't go through the hell I've been seeing on farmers call me after it's too late.
A lot of farms, it seems, especially in the dairy industry, about a 10% contraction, not only in Michigan, but a lot of the surrounding states here going through that decision of what do you do next with the farm or how does that next generation get involved. If people do want to look for resources, where do you say they start and what are some of those hard conversations that need to be had?
Well, I think the discussion, I mean, I'm probably one of the leading experts in North America on succession planning. I've been writing 9 farm magazines on the topic for many years. But the issue is that until you as a family can sit down and squeeze out 10% extra profit this year, forthcoming, you're not ready to talk about where the farm's going to be in 10 years' time. I mean, it's a matter of the family putting aside their egos and being able to actually make rational decisions together. And if you're able to do that, it's going to improve farm profitability, but more importantly, it's going to dramatically change family relationships. And what I see with succession planning is families have never sat down and made decisions together, and then they're talking about where something that took several generations is suddenly going to be. And everybody has different visions, and everybody has the need to be right instead of things actually being right, and the egos get in the way. So if you can, first of all, this forthcoming year, whether you have a succession plan with your accountant or not, I mean, it doesn't matter. A lot of farm families struggle with actually being able to sit down and make decisions together. So if you as a family can set a goal, a lot of farm families I work with, they're getting paid $13 a hundredweight for milk. And I've written on a lot of farm families, we've taken spray paint and put $13 on the milk house door. And with those families, we've seen them drop their cost of production dramatically because suddenly the family goes from my ideas to our ideas. And we get everybody from butting heads to pull in the same direction. So we don't try to solve all the problems in one day. And this is why I have a 90-day program is, trying to limit, each week if you can make one improvement in how you guys work together and make one improvement in farm profitability. And it can't be, a simple thing like building a barn next door, because frankly, you don't have those resources at this stage for a lot of families. It's a matter of sitting down and figuring out one way to make $3,000 without spending more than $30. And if you can exchange those ideas together as a family and get used to actually weighing the pros and cons without egos getting involved, then after 90 days, you can start making $100,000 decisions without it being a big blow up.
Meeting with specialty crop growers, are there any differences amongst the commodities or different parts that you're dealing with in farm country that might have some of these issues?
No, that's actually the surprising part. Is I'm on the phone every morning with two brothers who have 1,500 acres of vineyards, and it's the same problems we have. And 10 minutes later, I actually meet with three brothers who are running, 1,000 cow dairy. And it's all about how the farm family makes decisions together. And that's my focus, is getting everybody from button heads to pull in the same direction. I don't care what you do, it's a matter of how do you actually make decisions together. And it doesn't matter what commodity is, you guys all struggle with the same problems.
If some of these families can't get their act together, what could that mean for the future direction of agriculture really in the U.S. and beyond?
When you go out and you feed cattle every day, it's impossible for you to fathom that barn being empty or your family name not being on the mailbox. And I know that from personal experience. My Uncle Gerald, just because you're a successful farmer 5 years from now, 5 years ago, doesn't mean you're going to be successful 5 years from now. And I think that's a reality. Is we have the biggest disease we have in agriculture is entitlement. And I can speak that way because I'm not farming myself, because I was a seventh generation farmer, 1832 on the back end of my farm. The first white man was killed in our county. And I thought I had the right to farm. And the fact is nobody has the right to farm. And I think for this farm crisis right now, the most important thing that happens is for you to realize that businesses go bankrupt every day, and there's nothing to say that it can't be yours. And the probability is that it will be yours. My Uncle Gerald was the most successful farmer in our county. He had 5 men working for him, and he did the work of 5 men himself. And he did not make the moves in the early 80s. He just chose to ignore his problems and just work harder. And he had the perception that the market prices would rise any day. And they did, but not in time for him. And in 1983, I was just 8 years old, and I was put underneath a hay wagon. And my Uncle Gerald had to sell his haying equipment on a day that he should have been haying. In 1984, he went bankrupt. And we talk a big game about risk in agriculture, but we don't really understand what that means. And too often we think that the toast, when it hits the floor, always comes butter side up. And I can't go back in a time machine and shake my Uncle Gerald, but I can shake you right now. My Uncle Gerald, he lost the farm in 84. He was disowned by the family for ruining our family name. He was divorced. His wife and his kids never spoke to him again. The community turned their back on him. My Uncle Gerald worked from 5 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night every day of his life. And he actually got diabetes a year after his bankruptcy. And he couldn't support himself. And he got to be the point of being homeless. And we had to use dental records to identify his bloated body. The thing is that he did not die of the elements. He died out of a sense of entitlement. He thought back in the early 80s that because he was the most recognizable, well-respected farmer in the late 70s, that he would never be touched by the farm crisis. And I think it's very critical for every farm family to assume that you're the underdog and do everything you can to make sure that you're not at risk. And for our generation, it's going to be 10 times harder because we're no longer sole proprietors where one person can make all the decisions. We have multiple generations farming together and multiple siblings quite often. And it's 10 times harder when you have a group of people making decisions together. And so the thing is, we got to take this situation seriously. We have to assume the worst and hope for the best, but assume, if you're getting paid right now $13 hundredweight milk, you got to assume that it's going to be like that for 5 years. And you just got to assume that, start making decisions based on that. And either you get out or you are driven to get your cost production down on that number. And it may seem impossible, but I've been dealing with this for years, and you get a group of farmers sitting around the kitchen table, all those ideas that you guys have been arguing about for the last 10 years start to make sense. And if you combine those ideas, you can easily squeeze out 10 to 25% within a year. I've seen it done so many times over the last 10 years using this methodology that I outlined in this book.
That generational weight for some farmers is really putting more weight and more stress and issues beyond maybe what they could deal with. What kind of resources are available if that weight is too much for a mental health perspective, and maybe some of the signs from those on the outside?
Well, probably nobody's dealt with farm suicides as much as I have in the last decade, for my generation, as far as I know. I've taken more firearms off of farms than I've got fingers. And the thing you have to understand is that we talk about farm suicides and we blame the markets, we blame mental health, but we don't blame the business culture on the farm family. And what led to a man, when you make a decision to hang yourself, that is a definite decision. But what we haven't recognized as an agriculture community is what led to that moment was 20 years of the family all having the attitude is, it's my way or the highway. Everybody making definite decisions. And this dysfunctional decision making that's happening on family farms, where we're constantly bickering about everything, is creating dysfunctional families and dysfunctional businesses. And it's just simply the economic circumstances that wipe out these families. And so my solution to this is pretty simple. It's on the edge of your fingertips. And instead of looking at things one way or having your pointy finger out all the time, you got to look at things five different ways. For every decision that you guys argue about as a family, you got to list off different options. with your partners and brainstorm. If you only have three different ideas, brainstorm two more. And then you start making decisions. You weigh the pros and cons of these options and then make decisions together as a family. This dictatorship style of leadership is creating farm suicides. It's killing us.
Andy, any last comments to leave us with? You know, when you're dealing with other families and some of the issues planning for the next generation?
I think what we haven't recognized is that the biggest change we've had in technology and farming over the last 50 years is that there's fewer farmers dropping dead of heart attacks in their 50s than back in the 1950s. Modern health sciences is a game changer. Now, I'm not going to get talking about Viagra today, but the thing is that back in the 60s, when Dad was 60, he would retire because his hips were shot. And now he's getting hip replacement, or he's getting a piece of cancer taken out of his body, or getting a heart stent, and farming into his 80s or 90s. And that's fantastic. If you want to farm to the day you die, I'm all about making that happen. But the problem we have on most family farms is instead of there being one generation farming, we've got two, if not three generations farming together. And quite often, because the economies of scale that are required to farm, it's foolish to break up capital. So suddenly you have cousins or at least siblings farming together. And you've got a situation in most family farms, instead of there being one dictator on the farm, you've got multiple dictators on the farm. And there's a lot of money slipping between the cracks because you can't make decisions together. And there's a lot of, we talk about mental health. A lot of stress is created because of this dysfunctional dynamics. And this nonsense has got to stop. And so my whole premise is, how do we get everybody from butting heads to pull in the same direction? And I think the thing I'd just like to comment about our upcoming farm crisis, it is not going to be markets, it's not going to be weather. It's going to be the fact that we can't freaking make decisions together and react to the circumstances. And you take a guy back in the 80s farm crisis, most farms are sole proprietor operations. And so a guy could get bad news from the bank, he could go plow for a week, he could go see several people in town and make several decisions and turn around the farm. The problem we have with our generation is we got two, three decision makers and everybody can't sit down and make decisions. We've had commodity prices drop by half. And how many farms have been able to sit down with their partners and even be able to squeeze out an extra 5% profit through newfound efficiencies? It's a world of me, what I think. And it's a battle between the different family members as to who's in control and whose ideas you're going to go with. And the only way we're going to get through this farm crisis is by sharing our ideas, being able to make joint decisions together. And frankly, 10 years from now, I think we're going to lose 50% of our farms. The families that are going to survive are going to be the ones that that simply evolve, turn working with family from a weakness into strength. The families that actually survive in 10 years' time, instead of pretending to the community that they're the perfect farm family, they actually become that family. And they do that by improving how they make decisions together.